You're listening to Classical 95.9, WCRI Block Island, Exeter, the classical station.
Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight, it is indeed a pleasure to have two gentlemen in our studio that have not been here before. We have two rookies, which I always love that because I can tell them just about anything and they might go along with it. But we have people that have written something of great interest, particularly if you are a Rhode Islander and or a history buff. But just about anybody will be interested in this. We're going to be talking about the premiere of a three-act opera, and it's called William Sprague and His Women. And with me tonight is Jeffrey Gibbs, and he has written the opera and the music. Welcome, Jeffrey. Nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Jeffrey is a retired music composition professor from the University of Rhode Island, right?
Yes.
And how many years were you at URI?
Well, I came to URI in 1965 in swaddling clothes.
Right.
And then I retired in 2001 so I could devote my time entirely to composing.
Well, we're going to be talking about the opera that he has written, which comes from the libretto, which was written by Richard Vangemersch. And I probably messed your last name up a little bit, Richard,
well,
didn't I?
It's good enough for America.
All right. Yeah. How would you say it if you were...
In the old country, would be Vangemersch.
Mersch.
But okay. I just don't pronounce it correctly.
All right. Along with most other people, probably. And you are also a retired professor from URI, correct?
Yes, happily retired.
Happily retired.
Yeah.
And I
was a professor of accounting whose interest was history, accounting history. And I've done a lot of histories like this one.
And this led you to the kind of the life and times, if you will, of William Sprague, right?
Yeah, William Sprague and his wife, the famous Kate Chase Sprague, were the builders of Conotchet Farm and their Conotchet Mansion.
Which was in South County.
Which was in South County, Narragansett, right across from Narragansett Pier.
Mm-hmm.
That mansion, which was felt to be as heralded a house of the 19th century in the country, burned October 11th, 1909. I gave a 100-year look at it 100 years later.
Wow.
And as a result, I got very fascinated with Governor Sprague, Kate Chase Sprague, William's other wife, and Conotchet.
Now, this might seem like an unusual subject for an opera, although operas have lots of unusual subjects, as most of our audience know that enjoy opera. But so you wrote this as a play.
And it was performed. People liked it. They got my punchlines. And I had given the play to Jeff, who was my luncheon companion many times. And he said, the next day I saw him, he said, I started the opera that night, and I've never been more taken back by anything than that comment. I said, huh?
So Jeff, you started it right away, so that you had you knew you were getting the rights to this. You didn't have to worry about Hollywood or the Broadway producers or anything. You were taking it.
Yes, that certainly is an important point.
Right.
And of course, my real interest, though, was at last having a subject that was about Rhode Island, having something I could make into an opera that was telling a story about local events, Narragansett.
Narragansett. Now, I have to tell you that when I first met Richard and Jeff in the conference room before we went on air, Richard had brought in half of the Library of Congress with him, with all of the material and interesting things that go along with the Chase family and So we're not going to have time for a lot of the details, but we are going to get to listen to some of the music, which was recorded last July during a premiere of sorts. And we'll listen to some of those pieces that Jeff has brought with him, and we'll explain those as we go along, and then we'll get some history and background on each of those from Richard. So this is going to be performed at the University of Rhode Island on Sunday, September 30th at 4 o'clock at the Fine Arts Center Concert Hall. And admission is only, I hope I'm reading this correctly, I hate to give a wrong price,
$10? $10. Yes. And $5 for students.
Wow. Proceeds go to the URI Department of Music Scholarship Fund. And you'll also be accepting donations, of course, as usual. And that's going to go to the Rhode Island State House Preservation, the Sprague Fund.
Yes. We are redoing the Governor Sprague portrait, which is the largest portrait of the governors in the State House.
Couldn't you have saved a lot of money? Because you showed me the portrait. Couldn't you have saved a lot of money if you left the horse out?
Well, it was the Governor Sprague wanted his horse in the portrait.
It is very
It was done by Nicholas R. Brewer, a great portrait artist who became very famous for his work on Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay.
So he also did the artwork in the second opening of the Conotchet Mansion.
All right. Well, we'll get into a lot more detail, but right now we're going to listen to the first track of music. Jeff, tell us what this is about.
Well, first it's being sung by Rene de la Garza, a baritone of distinction in Rhode Island.
Well known to our show, been on here many times.
Yes, and he is teaching voice at URI. And the soprano is Kate Norigian. She is one of his students. And presently, she is now making a career for herself as an opera singer. I was very excited to hear the two of them singing together in this track, where we have, it's a meeting in 1860 of Kate and William. And I create a waltz for the two of them in their first meeting. They do some dancing as well as singing. But the scene actually opens up with soldiers coming on stage to a song, a shanty of 1812, The Constitution and the Guerriere. You might wonder, why in the world is that in the scene? It's because Kate and William met at the dedication of a monument to Oliver Hazard Perry, who was the...
also from Rhode Island.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. Very famous Rhode Islander. All right, so that's the first track, and then we're going to go right to the second track. And what's that about?
Now, the second track is the wedding song sung by Kate. And for this, I used as a text the actual news accounts of this wedding, which was considered to be just about the biggest social event of the Civil War period. It took place in 1863, and... everyone of
the place to be, right?
Yes, including Abraham Lincoln. They were all there at the wedding.
All right, we'll listen to that and then be back with more.
Meet there. Salmon Chase was elected to the U.S. Senate for the term starting in March of 1861. However, President Abraham Lincoln, an opponent of Chase for the Republican nomination, appointed him to be the Secretary of the Treasury.
Listening to great music provided by Jeffrey Gibbs, who is the music composer of this opera. And we're going to get right to another piece of music because we went a little bit long in our first segment there. So, Jeff, I'm going to ask you to just introduce this next piece before we take our first break.
The next excerpt is actually the tax speech that William Sprague gave before Congress in the Senate in 1869. It was a very brave speech, a brash speech, which actually destroyed his political career. I love the speech because it talks about those lawyers in the Senate who do not understand the needs of the people.
Not much has changed, right?
Yes. You will hear also in the opera occasionally the voice of a newscaster, and that's Mark Connelly, who is imitating Walter Cronkite, a kind of "you are there."
All right.
And also with this particular section, We then move on into a description of the First Battle of Bull Run, which was the moment of great heroism by William Sprague, one of his fond memories. And he also talked about this before Congress.
Yeah, he actually had a death wish. And I think he was hoping, and he was an idol. His idol was Garibaldi in Italy. Mm-hmm. He was hoping he could be like Garibaldi and win the whole Battle of Bull Run and end the Civil War.
I see.
And he was willing to give up his life for that event.
So that he could be the one that did it.
Yes.
The famous one.
Yes.
Right. It's a little bit lengthy piece, so we won't have time for the whole thing, but we'll listen as much as possible, and then we'll be back with more after this commercial break.
Speculated upon and loaned by hundreds of irresponsible persons. Great interest must war on smaller ones in order to sustain themselves. Riches find their way to the pockets of the rich. And deeper poverty comes to the homes of the poor.
These speeches ripped into President Grant, the Senate, individual senators, especially Senator Henry B. Anthony of Rhode Island, the owner of the Providence Journal and a leader of Providence Society, the Rhode Island troops at the First Battle of Bull Run, and General Ambrose Burnside. This ended Sprague's effectiveness in the U.S. Senate, in the Republican caucus, and in Rhode Island forever.
I was slight, small, timid, and a quiet person who relied on the power of position and wealth. Yes, I had a breakdown in 1859, or I would have married Eliza. Yes, my mental turmoil led to hyperactivity. During the First Battle of Bull Run,
the troops of Rhode Island were posted.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, having a very interesting evening talking with two very excellent guests on the subject of Rhode Island history and opera. This is, we are listening to parts of an opera called William Sprague and His Women. And this all started from a play which Richard wrote about how many years ago did he write this?
I wrote this in 2011.
Oh, so this is brand new.
Oh, this is brand new, yes. It was performed late in 2011. Tremendous audience reaction, and that sort of buoyed my spirits. They actually got my one-liners.
Now, was this your first attempt at a play?
No, this is my second play. I did one in 1994, and at this age almost 72, this might be my second and last play.
Well, never say that. I mean, we have a lot of famous people that went well past that writing. So you could be the next Irving Berlin.
I needed it.
You got 30 more years to go. But now a little bit about the history. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you are very involved in the history, Richard. And just give us a minute or so of why you chose this particular subject.
Governor Sprague and his wife, Kate Chase Sprague, together built the Conotchet Mansion, which was the centerpiece of Narragansett Pier, and what I believe to be the takeoff of Narragansett into Narragansett Pier in 1888. Finally, Narragansett broke away from South Kingston, largely because of the impetus given by Governor Sprague and his first wife, the famous Kate Chase Sprague.
Now, what happened to the relationship between those two?
It went sour really almost from the beginning. There was a mismatch between the two. And I don't really believe Kate Chase married Sprague for his money. Kate wanted to make her father, the infamous Salmon P. Chase, president of the United States.
Now, we're talking about the very historic, nationally historic family, Chase family. Today, Chase Bank, for example, is remnants of that, right?
Yeah, it is for some reason named after Salmon P. Chase. I am not a student of Salmon P. Chase, and I don't know the connection, but clearly Chase Manhattan is named after Salmon Chase. He was Lincoln's Secretary of the Treasury during the Civil War, and his face was on every greenback. So if you see a greenback that... And right now, by the way, he's on the $10,000 note.
Wow.
I'd rather have the $10,000 note.
Than the knowledge.
A greenback you can buy for about $300 on the market.
Right. As a historic piece, right?
Yes.
Okay. So now all of this goes together, and there were how many wives of William Sprague?
Just two.
Okay.
And there was one major mistress. She never made it to the wife status, but she wrote the most colorful woman's rights, woman's power book, and she called it The Merchant.
Hmm.
And in it, there were nine other vignettes in which she spoke about woman's rights and how she was really held back by society. It's a most fascinating book. The title is The Merchant Prince.
Excellent. All
and
right.
You'd love it if you're into women's rights. William Sprague supposedly got her pregnant, and she did not want to get married. William Sprague wanted to marry up in society. I think his mother wanted that more than William.
I see. So the title, William Sprague and His Women, is really about two wives and then...
The mother. Who really was a dominant figure. The infamous Avis, who was married to the son while she was the sister of the second wife. and then, of course, their daughter and their granddaughter. And also we have a woman like the mistress is in the play as well. She plays a very interesting role along with the second Mrs. Sprague. We have woman galore, and it makes sense. It is mostly women who are attracted to this opera, maybe an opera in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that of the audience, 60 to 70% will be women. The 30 to 40% men, half of them will be dragged by their spouse or significant other.
Well, I don't know. I think I'd like to see it. It sounds very, very interesting. And speaking of being interesting, let's get to another piece of music and tell us what this next piece is going to be, Jeff.
Well, we've already heard about the disturbing relationship of William and Kate, and you can imagine what that did to the life of the son, Willie. Willie, when he reached adulthood, he was a ne'er-do-well. He never could seem to find himself. His marriage ended in divorce, and he ended up in Seattle, hoping to make a career out there. But he quickly drank away and gambled away his resources. He committed suicide in 1890 in Seattle and crumpled a letter that he had written to his father and put it in a wastebasket. The letter was retrieved and it was sold to the Providence Journal. And can imagine the horror of the family finding this very private letter in the paper. Wow. And this letter becomes the source for the following aria sung by Mark Conley, a URI professor of voice and a tenor in the cast. Mark Conley playing the role of the son. And this is the actual suicide letter.
Wild Willie could not stabilize himself at Canonchet. Part of the story will be told when we interview Avis Weed Sprague Wheaton Borden. In the matrimonial line, for instance, but when one always likes to hear from former friends and acquaintances, not that you have given me any of wit and humor upon you. Oh no, quite the contrary. Your letter was one of those cold and chilling communications that pass between men. When one gets a bill of goods charged more than is shown in the invoice, talk to me about the high lizard at the North Pole. The awful absence of heat when a friend won't lend you a fire. Lord mercy, take those seats away back in the rear and hide their faces in the very shame in the face of that letter. With my sensitive and highly considerate nature, except to my feelings.
and they are practically of no use except to me. Out here I am thrown among strangers. Thrown among strangers again. Cast upon a desert isle, as far as soul communication is concerned. I cannot tell how I long for love and affection, that I have never experienced and cannot describe, yet long for. Ah, me, I fear my dream never be realized, never be realized. But this sentimental bliss will never do, will never do. I have a lot of it stored up and had to
Well, this is definitely the kind of show where we could talk for hours and hours and hours about all of the background and the history of this, but unfortunately we've got a restricted amount of time, so we're going to try to get to the next piece of music right now before we take the next commercial break. Let's squeeze one in. Jeff, what's this going to be?
Well, in this scene, Kate Nerigian is singing the role of Avis Weed Sprague Borda.
She's the female villain. The male villain is Zechariah Chafee, the great grandson, the great grandfather of our current governor.
All right.
Who pardoned the murderer of William Sprague's father. So we go full cycle here. We find that William Sprague's arch enemy, Zechariah Chafee, his great-grandson pardons the murderer of his enemy, William Sprague. What a connection.
Yes, but the Irish in me is not unhappy about the pardoning of John Gordon. Okay, so that also in this, along with Kate Nerigian in this scene, we have Rene de la Garza as William Sprague, who expresses his hatred for her as she sings a wild tango about her later marriage to a wealthy Austrian with estates in Puerto Rico.
All right. Once again, we'll try to listen to as much as possible of this before we take our next break.
I saw my daughter's surprise, marriage to a socialite. I deserve a given, I am given again, again. So, against the advice of Father William, his sister
Avis was to lose Prince Charming to her social secretary, Emily Bell. Bill's infidelity with Bell caused divorce proceedings to rig. Avis died on March 7, 1923 in Narragansett.
You've got what you deserve.
We are back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Maino, and we're having a very pleasant evening talking about William Sprague and His Women, which is a three-act opera which is going to be performed at the University of Rhode Island's Fine Arts Center, and that's going to be on Sunday afternoon / evening, September 30th at 4 o'clock. Tickets are only $10 each, and students $5. If you'd like information, there's a phone number to call here. I'll say it slowly. It's 401-783-8853. So you got that? 783-8853. Or you can email Jeff directly at GEOFFGIBBS. So Jeff Gibbs at URI.edu. If you'd like more information, or you just want to drop him a line and say he did a great job on the show today, either way, so you can do that. Richard, I'm going to finish up with you. We've gone way over time talking today, so we're going to try to summarize this a little bit. You said an interesting thing to me off air during the last commercial break. I asked about why would people want to go to this, and you said?
It is truly a spectacular show about spectacular people. And I really urge you to come just to, for two reasons. One is the celebration continuing for 4 years of the 150th year of the Civil War. Uh-huh. And Governor Sprague was intimately involved in the Civil War, both as a governor. He was Abraham Lincoln's leading supporter at the beginning of the war. In fact, next to Colonel Ellsworth, he was the best known person in the North, other than President Lincoln.
Right.
And so that's the Civil War celebration, that we have a Civil War group, a choral group, a regiment group. And also it's about people. And it shows you the absolutely that people haven't changed. Politicians haven't changed.
Even some of the names haven't changed.
And even the names haven't changed because of the long-term standing feud between the Sprays and the Chafees.
That's amazing. Amazing how history does repeat itself. And Jeff, I want to thank you for your explanation of the music, and I wish we had more time to get into this a little bit deeper, but we are constrained to this, so we'll thank you for being here and ask you to finish up with an explanation of the last piece of music that we're going to listen to today.
One note before.
Sure.
There are two other members of our cast I'd like to mention. Norma Chiesa, who is singing the role of the second wife, Inez, a failed opera diva. And Leah Kenny, who is singing the role of the mistress, Mary Eliza.
While you're on that, before you do the description, I probably should have asked this before. Most of these people are tied to the university in some way, right?
No, not necessarily. Some have been students at Rhode Island College. Almost all of them now are in their professional careers.
Okay.
Yeah, with Opera Providence.
Yes, a number of them, yes, are involved in Opera Providence.
So are we going to have a cameo appearance by Dr. Bob DiRobbio from Opera Providence? He could come in and do something, I think. But anyway, well, that's a subject for another show. So thank you both for being here. I appreciate your history and your summation, Richard. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And now back to you, Jeff.
Yes, well, the opera finishes with a final soliloquy by William Sprague. Now, we have to think of William Sprague as being a spirit. He really is beyond normal time constraints because he has been arguing and praising his descendants as well as his wives and mistress. So we have
Governor Chafee.
Yes, and so here we have him looking back over his life in a final soliloquy.
All right, great. Okay, make sure you take advantage of this. You've only heard a small portion of the opera tonight, and the entire thing will be performed on Sunday afternoon, September 30th, at 4 o'clock at the University of Rhode Island Fine Arts Center Concert Hall. So make sure you get there and support this wonderful event. Till next week, we'll see you all on Conducting Conversations.
Kate, I apologize. I courted and married you with a hope you and your magnificent father would inspire me to greatness. Instead, I found I could not match up with you or him. How I hated Senator Henry B. Anthony, Senator James W. Nye, and most of all, Senator Roscoe Conkling and Frank Blair. To that, inspired by the words of President Lincoln, all of them took advantage of my inferiority complex until I self-destructed in 1869 on the Senate floor. Most of all, I hate Zachariah Chafee. Can you imagine over 100 years after the Panic of 1873, another Chafee pardons John Gordon? I did a poor job with my children. Liquor had much to do with it. I'd like to live those relationships over again. I enjoy. Today's corporate bankruptcy laws were there in 1873, A&W Sprague would have been saved. I love living in Narragansett and Canonchet Farm and Canonchet Mansion. How I wish the property was still intact and the great fire of 1909 had not occurred. Remember me to never. transit. I would hope to hear that my portrait in a state house has been well preserved.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.